One of the foundational ideas of my play is that the Western world went through a period during which religion was discredited, largely because of the Christian success in gaining access to power. And after a while, if you read Voltaire, he's objecting to the fact that the religious people have control of the entire society. Mm-hmm. So there was an overthrow of religion in the 18th century, at least in the minds of top intellectuals and a large number of people in the populace. And that age of reason also was discredited by World War I. Technology and science were no longer seen to be a viable path for some sort of paradise. And my play tries to make the point that it's at that point that irrationalism in the form of Hitlerism became powerful. And it seems to me that what we need now in a post-Holocaust world is to return to some sort of religious age in which religion casts off all those things that made it so unpalatable in the 17th century and before, casts off its intolerance, casts off its refusal to accept the best in science, and recognize that religious values are absolutely necessary if our technological society isn't to end in another Holocaust, whether nuclear or otherwise.
What I wanted to just elaborate on in terms of the Holocaust becoming a kind of an American phenomenon is that what I think happened in our society because of that is that many other groups who felt that they didn't have a role in the formulation of what they felt to be their America or their vision of America, you know, learned from the Jewish experience in bringing about this ability of an event, as I said, that didn't take place on American soil, that really wasn't part of the American experience, to become so much a part of America. And therefore, it meant, you know, that the African-American community, the Latino community, the gay-lesbian community, all kinds of communities that could use the phraseology of the term the Holocaust or genocide to put forth their claim because they saw how successful it was in terms of this event and creating an Americanization,
point,
if you will, of the Holocaust. Bob said, you know, my parents were single survivors of 14 brothers and sisters and innumerable extended family. You know, and for years I questioned what it was that, you know, made my life the way it was in terms of growing up in that kind of an environment, in that kind of a home. And it really had no meaning for me. It was just an event. You know, it was the war. But as I talked to my father, blessed memory, in terms of his experiences, it became clear to me, of course, that, you know, there was more than one war being fought. And it wasn't just the National Socialist vision of a world that was free of Jewish influence, but it was also a world that was free of the kind of human values that allowed minorities to flourish and to be part of a society in which they were clearly outsiders, but which they were struggling to be insiders. Our post-Holocaust world, if there's any meaning to the losses of so many of us who are second or third generation sons and daughters of that Holocaust, is that it's given a voice, if you will, to so many other voiceless communities, not only in today's world, but as you'll see from Apo, the Armenian filmmaker, that it's given voice to other communities who preceded the Jewish world and allow them to finally say, you know, this is something that we need to understand. This is how we need to shape our memory. And, you know, we talk about the Holocaust as this great leap forward in terms of technological or industrial murder. Well, you know what, my dear friends? We've taken an awful lot of leaps since then. And it hasn't resulted at the moment in technological murder of an entire people or an entire group. It's happened. It happened in Cambodia. It happened in Indonesia. It happened in Rwanda. It happened in Bosnia. It's happening in Darfur, even though we now don't know quite what to call the event there. And it's given us symbols in other African countries, like Kenya, the possibilities of it. We need to understand that there is an evil the word evil exists in our world. We didn't like to use it much because it was such an amorphous phrase, but after 9/11, people began to use the word evil an awful lot more. And I think if we understand that there is a kind of an evil that is part of who we are, that nobody is an innocent or perfect individual.
Yes, well, whenever any group is demonized, whenever any group can be said to be in some sense inferior or deadly or dangerous, that's when genocide can happen. And it, you know, there's a play by Carol Churchill called Mad Forest, which is about the overthrow of the communist government in Romania. But after that overthrow, she shows, based on documentary studies, that the populace turned against each other. Old ethnic hatreds, old racism, old bigotry, no longer suppressed by the communist dictator, suddenly came out in a more democratic format. Same thing happened in Yugoslavia. There are a lot of old hatreds around. It's not just hatred of the Jews.
That's right. And, you know, even though anti-Semitism is called the oldest or the longest hatred, it's matched by intensity, for instance, in the hatred against the Roma peoples, what we commonly call gypsies, who continue to be an oppressed people, a people who are hunted down and murdered in many cases, who are seen as being parasites. There are people all over this world who, unfortunately, have to live under situations where the various aspects of the development of a genocidal society can and still do produce themselves, whether it's a perfect storm that we haven't seen yet that maybe will allow it to happen again as it did and continues to do in terms of technology, which, of course, is the great fear.
And are we really post-genocidal in that case?
Yeah, and I think the term never again, you know, we all use it. It was a term that even the survivors of the Holocaust brought out as part of their philosophy in those early days and months after their liberation, because they claimed they had looked over the abyss. They had seen the worst that human beings are capable of doing to other human beings. And when they said, we're the ones who need to be in the vanguard of struggling against this, it was a wonderful message. I think Elie Wiesel is still one of the last voices of those surviving remnants that still had that feeling that it wasn't just a Jewish question, it was a human question. Just as anti-Semitism is not a Jewish question, it was for many centuries a Christian question until Christianity confronted it.